As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
This is a podcast from The Times. Go to thetimes.co.uk.
Thanks for joining me for another game podcast bonus, and with me today is Patty. And Patty, we recently had Tom Dart on what was his farewell bonus, mm-hmm. and I was quite struck by the fact that he talked about what it was like to watch football, to experience football as a boy. Yeah. Now, mm-hmm. obviously, Tom's a bit younger than me, and bit younger than you as well. Yeah. He spoke about the sort of the late 80s or early 90s. But I wanted to get a sense from you, because I'm trying to imagine what, you know, before school. You don't have to go in this country, strangely, you don't have to go that far back to find a time when there wasn't much football on television. Mm-hmm. But when you were a boy, I'm assuming there was even less football.
Well, we're going back over 50 years, over half a century. The first experience, I suppose, I had of football was my grandfather would. I mean, my stepfather had no interest in football; he was a rugby man. But my grandfather recalled the Dundee. I grew up in Dundee, and he recalled Dundee's Scottish FA Cup winning team of 1910. That's over a century ago. And then he told me about some of the characters in the team, and they formed in my mind. And I suppose I was a Dundee fan already.
Now, how did he know about them? Was he a regular at Dundee in 1910?
I think he must have been. Yeah, I think that they must have been word of mouth heroes, because I don't think he was ever a regular attender at the ground. But word of mouth, in a way, was more powerful than television is now, in the sense that, the romance of it was greater. You only talked about the great deeds of the players. You never talked about the time when they tripped over the ball, right, you know, in the mud, which you can see on television now. So, they became greater heroes, more flawless, I suppose, and certainly more charismatic. And that's certainly a difference. And of course, there were fewer. We didn't know there was football in England, let alone. When I was a little boy, I hardly knew there was football in England, let alone Serie A and the Primera and so on.
Did you know about, for example, did you know about the Munich tragedy and Busby when you were a little boy?
No, in fact, it was just after. I would have been aware of it, but it was just before Munich. I was aware of Manchester United because I knew Dundee had beaten Manchester United 5-1 in a pre-season friendly, and that was sort of a feather in the cap. But what was so different then was, I remember my grandfather, when he finally relented, and I think it was 1956 or 1957 when I would have been about 9 or 10, and he took me to the ground in his car, dropped me, must have given me a shilling, which is 4 pence, something like that. That was enough for me to get in. But he just left me, and I went in. I looked after myself.
He left you as a 9 or 10 year old boy.
Yeah, yeah.
He left you among thousands of people.
Yeah, yeah. But that wouldn't have been unusual then. I mean, that would.
Was there no crime in Dundee when you were a kid?
There was crime, but it was confined to the criminal classes. And I was used to going around on my own. How would I get to school? I would walk. I would get on a bus. I'd either walk all the way, or I'd get on a bus, pay, and get off the bus, and nobody thought it unusual. I mean, there was no, I hate the phrase health and safety, because I actually like health and safety, but the health and safety were not issues, or they didn't seem to be. I'm sure there were paedophiles and murderers in those days, but we weren't aware of them, and we weren't scared of our fellow man in the same way. It was a very different world. But anyway, the... So I went in, and I can clearly remember the match. In fact, I got a Dundee FC history book recently, and looked up the match, and it was indeed, as I remembered it, 1-0, Dundee 1, Hibernian 0. The Hibernian goalkeeper was a guy called Tommy Younger, an outstanding goalkeeper who went on to become head of the Scottish FA. I remember that, and of course the players then became heroes, but the main hero was the dark blue strip, you know, which they still have now, and they're still very proud of it. And I just fell in love with that strip. I'm still in love. The colour dark blue, when particularly in conjunction with white, really turns me on to this day. But can I tell you another thing about what was unique about supporting? We in those days, the reserve team, another thing that was different, the reserve team was very, very important. And it wasn't just a collection of players getting back from injury with a few kids. I remember there was a guy called Norman Beattie. He played for our reserve. He played for Dundee for 10 years, and I think he probably made 8 first team appearances. He was employed to play in our reserves. Anyway, the reserves we would watch. They would kick off early, so they didn't have to in the winter, so they didn't have to use the lights. A money saving exercise. We would pay. I remember it was 1.5 pence in modern money we paid to get in. We would go to watch the reserves, and when the match was over, across the road was Dundee United's ground. By then, it would be, because they had a 3 o'clock kickoff and the lights were on, they would open...
Sorry, this being Scotland, it gets dark at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, right? Is that
I think even in England, right. they have to use floodlights in the winter. But anyway, yeah. So we would come out after our reserve game, walk across the road, sneak in, because the gates would be open to let the early people out from Tannadice, and we'd go up, and that exciting... Why is it that football noise of a football crowd sounds better when you can't see the pitch?
Oh, yeah, when you're sort of walking up... Noise. When you're walking up
when
those
walking
steps,
up the
and you can
yep.
sort of see... You see the sky, maybe
yes.
the far stand,
yep.
and then as you sort of make it through into the actual arena, yep. there's a wall of... Yeah, no, that's...
I mean, and the sight of that green grass floodlit. I mean, and of course the noise the crowd make when you leave the ground 10 minutes early and somebody scores. Oh, it's the most frustrating noise in the world. Anyway, yeah. So, and we'd stumble up and we'd see the last 20 minutes at Tannadice.
But I have to ask.
Well, that's pretty good value, isn't it? 1.5 pence for 2 hours of what we considered top quality
and
football.
And by the way, young listeners, it's not as if 1.5 pence in Paddy's day, adjusted for inflation, is the £35 or £50 you might pay to watch top flight football today. But I wanted to just ask. I was just fascinated with how did you know about, I mean, this is obviously pre-internet. Mm. I'm assuming there was some radio, but probably not a lot of football, of
no.
Dundee football chat on radio back then.
Yeah.
How did you know? I mean, you talk about word of mouth. It would have been a local newspaper, I would assume.
Oh, yes.
But I mean, as a 10-year-old, did you read the local paper to
yes.
find about
yes.
the ins and outs of Dundee?
Yeah. Absolutely. We followed it through. I mean, we're very lucky in Dundee, we were particularly lucky because there was a major newspaper group, DC Thompson's, who brought out from Dundee a national Sunday newspaper called the Sunday Post. And they also brought out, which was the Saturday evening paper, which was all football, including live. I mean, the match almost took place within the paper.
This is a so-called Pinken, yeah?
It
yeah.
was a Pinken, although it was called the Sporting Post and it was just black and white. But they even had a thing called the Stampin' on the bottom. The paper was almost still hot when you bought it. You would leave the ground at 4:40 when at the end of the 3 o'clock kickoff, and you would walk towards the city centre. You would buy a paper on the way, and it contained a full report. I mean, mean, this is a. It was on the streets 20 minutes after the end. Okay, the final scorers would be stamped in by a sort of like a stencil machine.
This is true.
That you would get a full report of the first hour of the game, but the late scorers, there was a corner of the back page of the paper which was left blank. And as the papers went through the final stage of the processing, a sort of stencil thing would stamp in late scorer Gilzean, 71 minutes. And so you would
that might have completely changed the match.
Yes.
And Paddy, we need to leave it there, but I'm just absolutely fascinated, and I hope we can talk about this again, sort of this journey through the way we live about football, because for me, I think, you know, you talk to younger people today, we're so used to having all this information, but the idea that you would buy a newspaper where somebody had written a story, probably most of it written before the game, written a match report about the game, and then, oh, look, you know, three goals in the last 20 minutes, and, yep, but let's just stab them in and ignore the previous. So-and-so is rubbish, but then he scores a hat-trick, you know?
The first paragraph was usually a detailed description of the kickoff.
Paddy Barclay, thank you very much.
And, my pleasure.
And thank you, listeners, for hanging with us here on the Game Podcast Bonus.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Hi, I'm Jane Garvey.
And I'm Fee Glover.
Off Air with Jane and Fee is going live.
We are taking to the stage at the amazing Crucible Theatre in Sheffield on Friday, the 31st of May.
It'll be a night full of surprises. We'll have a special guest, we'll involve you in the audience, and we'll embarrass ourselves. You really won't want to miss it.
Well, the surprise is we don't yet know what's in it, so it genuinely is a night of surprises.
Well, you've surprised me already. It's not just us. Our live show is part of an exciting new podcast festival called Crosswires, which is taking place in some really amazing venues across Sheffield from the 31st of May to the 2nd of June.
So other podcasters that you'll be able to see include Katie Price, Catherine Ryan, Ramesh Ranganathan, and the original Adam Buxton. But there's also a whole host of free fringe events, family shows, surprise acts, and after parties that Jane and I haven't yet been invited to.
I'm sure it's only a matter of time. Head to crosswires.live for tickets and more information.